So 4 weeks ago, we discussed. So every second Wednesday of the month, we tend to do a nutrition seminar. And last month, we went through cardiovascular health. Now, Ben wanted me to continue around that vein for this month as well. So we're going to touch on who, just a quick hands up, who was on the call last month and who actually remembers any of it? One, good. Okay, that makes life a little bit easier. Two, possibly, right? Except for the coaches. So we spoke about cardiovascular health last month, and we went into some of the slightly more nuanced things that affects cardiovascular function. And we discussed why it's so important. It's particularly as there's no women on the call tonight, which might make it a little bit easier for my particular topic tonight. So I wanted to expand out slightly on it. So I wanted to touch on some of the, well, the most common side effects of cardiovascular dysfunction, and that is erectile dysfunction. And I'm not going to ask, like I normally do, who currently suffers with erectile dysfunction? Anybody? No hands? No, I didn't think so. That's all right. So, but I'll go through some of the statistics on it. We'll do a brief recap on what I did last month as well, so that obviously very few of you were actually on the call. So it'd be nice to do a recap on everything that we discussed so that we're all on the same page before we get into slightly more detail on kind of issues or how we can tackle that current, how we can tackle that issue. But first, let me just share my screen with you guys. And we can get started. So, if you guys have any questions throughout this process, please do not hesitate to drop anything in the chat. And if Andrew's the person I see first out of our team, so if anything in particular pops up, Andrew, that needs answering directly or quickly, please let me know and I can get that done. So, we're going to go through cardiovascular disease, coronary calcium score, and erectile dysfunction. Now, I know initially when I jumped on, I asked you guys, hands up, who here has erectile dysfunction? And nobody answered, as expected. But you have to understand that when you look at the statistics now in regards to erectile dysfunction, I was trying to dig through the research to try and find the exact numbers, which I found, but they were a little bit different from page to, from study to study where they discussed it. But then Ben sent me a link to the most recent one done by Peter Attia, where he had a urologist on, and he made it a lot more comprehensive and a lot easier to understand. So for 40% of men in their 40s, 50% of men in their 50s, 60% of men in their 60s, and 70% of men in their 70s. So it is a real concern, and the vast majority, when we look at it, 50% of people who have it will not discuss it. But I don't expect you guys to discuss it with me today, but we're going to try and come up with some solutions or some of the mechanisms behind it. Now, like I said, we're going to do a quick debrief of what we did last month so that we're all on the same page. So, what we're going to do today, we're going to talk about what actually cardiovascular disease is. We'll do the cardiovascular recap. We'll talk about coronary calcium or fatty deposits on all your arteries and veins, how they actually accumulate. But we'll also discuss in a little bit more detail testing that you guys can get done if you're interested to try and figure out exactly where your cardiovascular age is right now. And then we can, down the line, we can talk about methods in order to deal with that. We'll talk about how to fix erectile dysfunction. So, the two of the major reasons why we suffer from it. And then we'll talk about nitric oxide in particular. When we're in the fitness and nutrition sphere, we hear about all the fancy stuff regularly, things to boost testosterone, things to help you gain muscle quicker, so on and so on. Very rarely do we hear nitric oxide being discussed when it's really one of the compounding factors that is a sign, or poor nitric oxide production is one of the signs of ill health and accumulation of age. So we'll go through some stuff that we can do in order for you to gain more nitric oxide, to improve your health, and in the long run, improve your cardiovascular function. Briefly, we'll think about what cardiovascular disease is. Put it into four different components. So when we look at it, it's coronary artery disease, it's cerebrovascular disease. Now, one of the things that people tend to forget about when they think about cardiovascular disease is the brain component. So people come with symptoms like brain fog, forgetfulness, poor concentration, anxiety, fatigue, and they forget that there is always a cardiovascular component to that. As we age, and when I sit on calls with people and you say, like, what is the long-term goal for you? And a lot of them will talk about just being as healthy as they can for as long as they can. But they also mention that they want to keep their mental faculties. So they want to be mentally capable into the later years of their lives. But we have to remember there is a disease, a horrible disease called vascular dementia that we tend to ignore. So we all think of the issues in terms of Alzheimer's, but there's very much a brain component to cardiovascular disease. And it's something that has to be taken really, really seriously. So when we talk about cardiovascular health, it's not just your heart. We got to think everything in the periphery, your hands, your feet, your brain. And at the end of that, as we'll discuss, like erectile dysfunction plays a role. And then we got peripheral arterial disease. We'll actually touch on some of the signs and symptoms of that in people as we go through this. But when we think about anything that says, when I say periphery, and I say it way too often, but you always want to think of periphery as stuff that's away from the central organs. So hands, feet, head, these are all in the periphery. And these are some of the early signs that we can see of cardiovascular dysfunction as time goes on. And I just thought that was an interesting quote to put in for you guys. And as you'll see, when I get into coronary calcium or the buildup of calcium or fatty streaks in your arteries, that a man is very much as old as his arteries. And this was known by Thomas Sydenham. He was an English physician back in the 1700s, even, excuse me. The 1600s. And this has been known for a very, very long time. So unfortunately, with something like cardiovascular disease and cardiovascular health, it's very, very much the silent killer. The symptoms do not appear early, at least if you're not looking. But we'll go through some of those today. As I touched on last time when I did this chat, the vast majority of times you go to the doctor to check out for your cardiovascular health, they'll check cholesterol, they might check blood pressure, and that is all they really look at. So they'll look at LDL, which is low density lipoproteins, and they'll look at your cholesterol levels. 2 points for anybody who actually knows, I don't expect anyone to. Does anybody know, like, the percentage of heart attack sufferers, how many of them actually have high cholesterol? 2 points for the coaches. None.
Cole in the chat said zero.
50%, right? So if we understand that, we understand that cardiovascular disease is more than just your cholesterol and your LDL particles, all right? We hear about ApoB a lot now, and don't get me wrong, it's not something to be ignored by any stretch, but there is all these other factors that play into it. And you'll notice when we get onto the next slides just how prevalent it is, particularly for men. It is, if you look around this room, without sounding very, very pessimistic, 1 in 3 of us will die from cardiovascular disease. I think it's still all men here. So when we look at the other things that are involved, sedentary lifestyle is a massive one, but stuff like toxic chemicals, air pollution, pathogens is something we'll touch on, omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, hormones efficiencies, hypertension is the big one, medications. And one of the big ones that tends to be neglected is digestive health. So your microbiome massively impacts how well your cardiovascular system works. Now, this is the doom and gloom part. We'll get through this as quickly as we can. But cardiovascular disease is the biggest killer worldwide. particularly in men. And even this doesn't actually look at some of, like, so as you go down a little bit lower down that list, you see kidney disease. Cardiovascular disease has a massive impact on kidney disease as well. So this is just cardiovascular disease by itself being the major killer. And I look at it, it dwarfs the rest of the diseases. And we are not getting that much better at treating it. So I believe for the people who had heart attacks, when you went back 20 years, 50% of them, the most instant side effect was death. Now it's about 30%. But still, our actual treatment of this disease as a chronic disease is not getting much better. Now, I'll get through this. So don't worry too much when you look at a diagram like this. I understand it's extremely, it looks extremely complex. But just to understand the basic mechanisms at play and how cardiovascular disease actually occurs. So this is the recap from a month ago. So when we look at this lining here, this is called your endothelial. So this is like a single cell between your blood vessels and the soft tissue that's underneath. And eventually what happens, you have these bridges that binds them together. But when they get put under stress, so they can be put under stress, it can be a chemical stressor, cigarette smoke, alcohol use, drug use, these kind of things are all chemical stressors that can start to break down these tight junctions. Or you can get mechanical stress from high blood pressure. And inevitably it starts to chip away at that endothelial wall. And eventually it starts to break apart. And that's when LDL starts to do its damage. LDL by itself isn't a bad thing. It's a very positive thing. So it helps pass substrates around the body. So it passes fats and cholesterol around the body to be used for energy. But when we have too much of it, and when we have this sheer stress along the lining, it starts to creep under and it becomes oxidized. When it becomes oxidized, it needs to get removed. So this is why sometimes on blood tests, you'll see your doctors measure oxidized LDL. When it gets in there, it has to be removed, and it is done so by the immune system. And when this continually happens, when this happens sporadically, it's not such a big deal. The body deals with it. It takes this oxidized LDL, takes it through the lymphatic system, and it moves it out of circulation. But when this occurs over and over again, the compounding stress, we start to build up these foam cells. It starts to narrow the arteries over time. And this is where you get the buildup of, which we'll touch on a little bit later, you start to get the buildup of coronary calcium along this cell wall. And we'll discuss how actually damaging that is. But we'll talk about some of the ways that you can help to stabilize that plaque if you already have some. And it's great. There was very few actually on the last call, so we can do this again. So out of you guys, who actually knows their blood pressure? And if you're comfortable, chuck it in the chat. And I'll tell you how bad your blood pressure is, or not. In fairness, last time there was pretty good numbers. How do I get onto the chat again? Oh, wait. Come on, guys. Chuck your blood pressure down. 120 over 80, good. 106 over 75, that's pretty good. Dave, that's good, in fairness. 110 over 80. Tony, that is gold standard. Nobody got high blood pressure. Come on. Chad, I knew yours was good anyway. So when we look at the statistic, this is the single most modifiable factor, lifestyle factor, and a way in which we can affect cardiovascular health. Okay? So when people come in and they don't know their blood pressure, it's one of the first things I ask them to get done for me, because it's the most modifiable lifestyle factor that we can control. So whether that's through diet, nutrition, and lifestyle, whether it is through aerobic work, which I'm sure your coaches are pushing on you as much as they can, it's something that has to be taken into consideration. And let's look at the statistics. It's not a scare tactic, but you have to understand, when the new gold standard, I think, is 115 over 70. For every 10 points that your blood pressure gets above 120, you're taking 5 to 7.5 years off your life on average. That's significant. So I know there's a lot of coaches in here. So I know Lewis is here. I know Daniel's in here. So like when you guys, are you guys checking your client's blood pressure? Should be. Yeah, man. Like it's so important. But if you think, if you know people who are walking around with blood pressure of 150 over 90 and their doctors and the doctor says, oh, it's a little bit high. Yeah, it's a little bit high. You're taking somewhere between 15 and 22 and a half years off your life based off those statistics. So it's something that really has to be taken seriously. And there's generally speaking, like I haven't gone into much of the nutraceuticals approach here, but general lifestyle factors. So like incorporating sleep, stress reduction, like lower carb tends to work, aerobic work. And there is supplements that you can take. High dose potassium tends to work in those circumstances as well. Now, when we went back, so if you want to see this part in more detail, go back to the recording from 4 weeks ago. These are some of the more, not necessarily nuanced, but some of the reasons why cardiovascular disease tends to occur outside of the traditional allopathic methods, okay? So away from just lipid particle size and lipid particle amount. So gastrointestinal is a huge one. I'll go through them briefly, but like if you've got poor gastrointestinal health, they're actually starting to find, so we know we've all got bacteria within our gut. When that manages to leak into systemic circulation, we know that those particular bacteria are actually found in the plaque of people who have died from cardiovascular disease. So we know LDL does a lot of really cool things other than just the traditional thing that you think it does, passing fats and cholesterol around the body. It can actually bind to pathogens, so viruses, bacteria. It can actually bind to these things and take them out of circulation. When you've got really high LDL that doesn't get recycled, they just stay in circulation for long periods of time. Brain trauma is a big one. So if you have a history of concussions or you know people with a history of concussion, people lose control of their ability to regulate their own blood pressure. Insulin, we all hear about blood sugar being a massive influence. We'll go into a little bit more detail when we talk about testosterone later. But insulin, and not necessarily just chronically high blood sugar like we see in type 2 diabetics, but people whose blood sugar goes up and down and up and down, that's like inflammation, 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 and it's generally uncontrolled. Fat cells, I think most of us would have a general idea on. So if you've got a load of central obesity, that causes a lot of the issues that we saw just above, where we spoke about like damage to the cell, to the endothelial wall. Reproductive hormones, that means low testosterone for you guys. So if people are walking around with low testosterone, that has just as much association with cardiovascular risk as just high, okay? Thyroid, we won't touch on. Mitochondria is one I'll do a talk on, I'm sure, at some stage down the line. But energy production is really important. If we've got poor energy production, we tend to have poor cardiovascular health. Now, I went through this last time as well. So we're talking about, so what do we see visually before this actually becomes a real problem? Outside of blood pressure, easy for us to check, but what other symptoms? I've only just recently found this out, but erectile dysfunction is one of the first signs of cardiovascular dysfunction, because you have to consider you need perfusion and blood flow for proper sexual function, okay? But there's other things that we see as well. We spoke about the cognitive things, brain fog, fatigue, the inability to concentrate for long periods of time can be a sign of poor cardiovascular function. It's why when you hear people who do aerobic work for extended periods of time, these things tend to get better. But let's look in the periphery, like I spoke about. So hands and feet are always a really good sign. If you notice like lower leg, that your hair doesn't grow back like it used to, that's a sign of poor circulation. If you're noticing discoloration in the lower limbs, is a really big one. So if you're not seeing reddening of the skin, thinning of the skin, if you've got really funky looking toenails that you never had before, where it's starting to harden or it's starting to go white, because your nail bed should always be pink. If that's starting to go white, it's a sign of poor circulation. If you see vertical ridges along your nails, is a sign of poor circulation. People always associate it with cold hands and feet, they always associate with thyroid. That's not necessarily true. This can normally be a circulation problem, okay? varicose veins, spider veins, these are not just visual problems. They're normally circulatory problems. So these are signs that we can see easily. The onset of a very different one, which you mightn't quite realize, and it's a little bit further down the line, but the onset of really sudden anxiety can be a sign of poor cardiovascular function, where you can't place it, of course. All right. So there's some of the visual symptoms. But like I said, erectile dysfunction seems to come first. And these we did last month as well, but we'll just get through them. So like when your coach gets you on a call and is discussing lifestyle factors, and I know like I'm blue in the face talking about sleep and stress and all these other things. But when you look at some of the studies that are coming out on their effects on atherosclerosis, it's so evident that these should be the first steps you guys are taking in controlling your overall health. So when you look there, it's like arterial stiffness, and a major surrogate marker for atherosclerosis. So if you're not getting adequate or good sleep, you have to take it into consideration as something that you need to deal with. It's not just something that we do passively. It's really important for our health. Exercise, we all know this. But when your coach is trying to bash on you to do aerobic work like a little bit more often, this is the reason why. So aerobic work is really beneficial at lowering blood pressure in clients. That's why when we say steady state, 45 to 60 minutes, is boring, but it's important. And you can see, we'll touch on nitric oxide later, and I'll show you how important that is. But like when we look at aerobic work, it lowers blood pressure, lowers LDL, and it goes on and on and on what it does. But actually, maintaining muscle mass throughout lifespan is really important as well, because they are deposits for blood sugar. And elevated blood sugar over time is one of the markers of cardiovascular risk, like we see in type 2 diabetes. So exercise is always a really important one. And it's not just to get in shape. It's a lifestyle. It's something lifestyle-wise that you have to take into consideration forever. People who, centenarians, have been active their entire lives. There's a reason why they live to 100. And I love, like I said this last time, I love this one, basically because of what says at the bottom. So chronic stress is a potential suspect zero for atherosclerosis. So the people in the room, and like this isn't one of those things where I'm saying remove the stress from your life, because we can't. The kids, the wife, the work, it's not something that's going away. But our ability to be able to be stress resilient is extremely important. And that comes through physical endeavor a lot of the time, or the inputs that we put back in. So the food we eat, the stress reduction methods that we use. So whether that be meditation, whether that be cold exposure, heat exposure, whether it be aerobic exercise, whether it be weight training, some of them are inputs, some of them are outputs, but they create stress resilience. They allow the body to better be able to adapt to the stressful scenarios that are thrown at you. I don't know about you guys, but if I don't exercise and I eat like shit, things bother me an awful lot more. And I lose that ability to be resilient to stress. This was one of the ones that, like, the science on it's really, really clear now. Like, loneliness is a bigger predictor of death than alcohol consumption and cigarette smoke. And I think we all know that, like, we've known it forever that cigarette smoke is one of the worst things that we can do. But loneliness seems to be a better predictor of death. It flips the immune system for preparation for infection, because there's no one around us. By perception, there's no one around us to help us. So, like, when we look back on lockdown, for example, and that perception of loneliness, that affected a lot of people's immune systems, and actually affects your immune system so that you don't fight viruses as well. So a bit of a double-edged sword there. Yep. And then all the chemicals that can actually affect you. Now, people will look at this stuff and say, like, do I have to remove everything? Because it can be an obsessive thing. Like, am I ripping all the Am I ripping all the carpets out of my house? Am I not allowed to use normal cleaning products? Like, there's pollution in every major city. So, like, where do you start with this kind of thing? Like, and you don't necessarily have to think about it in that way. So, like, normally what I say to people in circumstances like this, like, what's the one thing that you can actually control here? So, like, if you're still using recreational drugs, I mean, it's an easy one, right? Well, it's not easy to give up, but it's one of the easier things to try and deal with, right? Than trying to get rid of cleaning products and trying to find organic cleaning products. But like plastic, for example, like if you're still drinking coffee from a plastic cup, you're getting a lot of BPA, which is really damaging to your overall health. Okay. If you're still heating your food in plastic containers, easy ways to wins. If you've got a lot of air pollution in your area, using something like an air purifier, a HEPA filter in the house, right? So there is things you can do here. I'm not asking you to rip your whole house out in order to avoid these, but understand that they do affect you. And quickly, right? So we went through all that really briefly, right? Before we move on to the main topic from today. What's one thing that you guys need to work on from the stuff we just spoke about? So just pick one. If there's loads of different factors, you can pick one or two, but give me one thing that you need to work on now and take it back to your coach and explain that this is my limiting factor now with cardiovascular health. Yeah, Russell, I guarantee the vast majority of these are going to be sleep. So David's put in stress. So like when we look at stress, like that's something that's got to be, whether that be input or output, right? So whether you need to actually do more things to lower stress within your life, 4 hours is ideal. 4 hours a night is ideal. Who knew? Sleep good, brain health and good. Stress. Yeah, so like it tends to come out, Lewis, as an interesting one. It tends to come up as predominantly stress and sleep that people need to work on. And those things are interlinked. So like if you've got a really high stress response and you're not getting enough sleep, it's an easy thing to go, we'll say it's not easy, but it's definitely the thing that you want to try and tackle as quickly as you can. I'll come back to that. Now, we'll talk about the buildup of coronary calcium briefly. So this is why when I spoke about earlier, you are as old as your arteries. And this is generally how life tends to progress in terms of everyone's arteries. So in your 40s, 50s, and 60s, you're getting this accumulation of fatty streaks and accumulation of calcium along the cell lining underneath all those foam cells that have been accumulating over time. And we need to understand that this isn't an inevitability for anybody. So they have people in their 60s and 70s that they've tested with zero coronary calcium. And it's generally from those who obviously live healthy lifestyles and stay active. But even if people flag for high coronary calcium scores, which we'll discuss how you can get done if anybody here wants to actually try it, that it's actually the stability of this plaque that's the most important factor in those circumstances. And someone's going to ask me, they normally do on these kind of calls, where they'll say, is there any way to reverse it? I don't think so. I remember listening to a particular lecture from someone before, and they said, how do you reverse coronary calcium score? And he goes, if you know how, step forward and accept your Nobel Prize, because it's not been done or proven to have been done. All right. So the stability of this is really important. It's loose plaque that breaks off that tends to cause heart attack and stroke. All right. So if you actually flag with these things, then taking out inflammation, oxidative stress, and all the markers that tend to do damage is of the most important. And if this remains stable, chances are you will die with it rather than of it. Okay. Does anyone here ever actually done a coronary calcium score? Just put yes or no. And it's not something that's done regularly, but something that's easy to get done. Dave, yeah. Tony, nice. So there actually is some people that have gone and got one, yes. Coronary CT, very similar. So we got some yeses. And if you don't mind me asking, if you're willing to answer, do you know what your score was? So 36. So some. So like when we look at 0% aisle, nice, Dave. You have to find out, Chad. And they say it's good. I don't necessarily trust them. So when we look at actually the score, what score do you want? Zero. So as plaque begins to accumulate, now 36, I know was mentioned, is minimal, but it's still something that has to be taken seriously. So like when you get guys that get like up into the hundreds and 400 plus, that is the most important thing in their life to them right now. This is a test you can get done for somewhere between 150 and 200 bucks. It's not expensive. And generally you can do walk-ins. Anybody in this room who's over 40 should strongly be considering getting this test done. And it gives you a really, really good idea of the age of your cardiovascular system. Okay? So I implore all of you to try and get this done at some stage. Now, let's get on to the pressing point. Erectile dysfunction. What causes it? What can we do about it? I stole this directly. So I was trying to put together my own acronym before I saw this. And then Ben sent me on the podcast from Peter Attia. And the guy who we had on actually had this written. And it was brilliant because it just covered it all for me. So I got to give credit where credit's due. This is not mine. Now, I'm not going to deal with the neural or the trauma. If it's trauma, I can't help, right? There's nothing we can do nutritionally to help with that. But predominantly, this is a vascular problem. So it's the inability to get blood flow around the body. And don't get me wrong, there's a psychological component here, but we're not really going to touch on that. But you can always think like sex is, what's the saying? It's, sex is like golf and sleep. If you think about it too much, you won't perform, right? And it's definitely one of the things that is a massive problem, mostly for men under 30, but there is a psychological component, but we're going to touch on more vascular and endocrine. So when we look at the vascular system, think about the vascular system as all your veins, arteries, and capillaries. It's their ability for them to vasodilate and get perfusion and blood around the body. And this is achieved by a molecule called nitric oxide. How many guys here take pre-workout? Loads, just chuck your hand up. Like, I know I do, not for any particular reason. I just like the buzz. But they always put in nitric oxide inducers in them. So you'll always see arginine, L-citrulline. You'll see these types of compounds in it. And they're responsible for vasodilation. So like arginine in particular is the precursor for nitric oxide. There's a caveat to that though. When we lose cardiovascular function, arginine doesn't tend to work anymore, because it's actually a problem with the enzyme that helps to produce nitric oxide. And there's a few ways to bypass that for people that are struggling. And creating more nitric oxide is extremely important for anybody who has cardiovascular issues or anybody who has erectile dysfunction, okay? But it's important to remember, actually achieving an erection is a parasympathetically dominated process. So what I mean by that is you have to be in a really, oh, there you go. Takes less than 15 minutes. Thank you, Tony. That's really helpful. So like you said, it only takes 15 minutes. It's non-invasive. Whip your shirt off. You get into the machine, you get a score back, right? But sorry, back to nitric oxide. I've lost my train of thought there. You have to create an environment to make the enzyme work better. So there's ways to bypass that. And in fact, in older people who have cardiovascular issues, giving them arginine for long periods of time actually makes them die quicker. So it's definitely something that we want to look at other ways to do it. So remember, nitric oxide vasodilates all your blood vessels to allow blood flow to get around the body a little bit quicker. And who needs it? Now, there's a couple of things in here that might jump out at you. So we create it through arginine, and there's another pathway through nitrates. So from our diet that we get from fruit and vegetables, beetroot is becoming a massive ergogenic aid in the sports industry because it's been shown to create more nitric oxide because it's got loads of nitrates in it. But they need to be converted in your body to nitrites to be used. Okay. And anybody who's on antacids, will it will ruin that. And one of the things, anyone who uses mouthwash regularly, it massively ruins your ability to be able to convert those. They've done studies on extremely healthy college athletes, and they've given them mouthwash for 2 and 3 weeks to use, and they've just watched their blood pressure increase. And I'm not saying for everybody that like it's something that you have to remove, but it's something that I definitely don't incorporate in my life as mouthwash anymore because of some of these studies. But when you look at like low energy, diabetes, circulation issues, anyone in their 40s or sexual dysfunction, it's really, really important for. Need to get through this a little bit quickly. So what, how can you, so what can increase it? Yeah, that makes sense. Nitrates is one of them. You need to take in a lot of vegetables to influence this, a lot. So we'll look at some of the other ways that you can do it. Like beetroot extract is a really, really good way. And there's a few other ways that we can do it as well, but eating a lot of vegetables can do it. And in fact, I know like we all want to eat organic. Organic vegetables don't give you as much nitrates as conventionally grown. That's not to say go away from organic at all. It's just to put that fact out there. So if you're eating predominantly organic, you have to eat a lot. Like there were some studies done where like you're talking like to get 500-600 milligrams, you need to eat like 12, 13 stalks of celery, or upwards of somewhere between 500 grams to a kilo of vegetables a day in order to achieve that. Okay, but nitrates through food is one way. Aerobic exercise works really well at increasing nitric oxide production. So does weightlifting, but it's a little bit more localized with weightlifting because you're working a particular muscle at a specific time. So like if you're doing a bicep curl, you should increase nitric oxide to the bicep, but it doesn't happen anywhere else. Whereas aerobic work is a little bit more global. And actually, one of the more nuanced things that you see, or slightly more anecdotal things I've heard about cardiovascular risk, has to do around people not being able to achieve a pump anymore. So if that's something that you notice at some stage in your life where you can, don't get me wrong, it'll come transiently from time to time, but people who just can't get pumps anymore can be a sign of poor nitric oxide production. Now, I actually just copy and pasted the statement from one of these studies. So pycnogenol is a French pine extract that's kind of come into our sphere a little bit more recently. But it's, when I first read the studies, Ben actually sent them to me. I literally thought like, this must be a joke. Like the benefits from this are just way too good with very little side effects, but shown to be really beneficial for ADHD, for concentration, for focus. And as you can see, people with organic erectile dysfunction who were given arginine, only 5% of those men experienced a normal erection. Whereas you give them 40 milligrams to 120 milligrams of this, by the third month, 80 to 92.5% of them were achieving full erection. That is massive. You don't get that statistics with Viagra. Viagra works in about 50% of the population. So pycnogenol, and that's a relatively low dose. Like 40 milligrams is really low dose of pycnogenol. Really interesting one. And then you look at some of the other things that influence, like, what this does, it directly stimulates the enzyme to produce nitric oxide. And because it's got so much antioxidants in it, it blocks the breakdown of it as well, of actually nitric oxide that you produce. Neo40 is another one that's big out there now. And some of the science behind it is really clear. Let's just say therapy, not therapy. Of nitrates and hawthorn extracts. So like stuff like hawthorn extracts were shown to be really beneficial. Vimpocetine, huperzine A, you can get these in combination generally, have been shown to be really effective at producing nitric oxide and creating vasodilation. So they're really, really interesting ways that you can increase perfusion to that particular area and to the extremity. So they did the studies on Neo40. They did like x-rays of the hands and people in Raynaud's disease where they can't get circulation to their hands anymore. And initially, like everything was blue and you could just see with the supplementation of Neo40, all the red blood flow begins to accumulate in the hands. So it's amazing some of the stuff that's done now that can be done with supplementation, okay? So when you think aerobic exercise, supplementation, if you want to use any of those, and lots of vegetables are really beneficial in those circumstances. Sorry, I know I've gone on for way too long, so we'll go through this quickly. So when we look at testosterone, So testosterone deficiency has always been associated. I normally lean towards the vascular component first, not always, but testosterone and how does it affect male reproduction? Let's not actually touch on the reproductive side of things. Think about more so what it does in terms of erections, right? We have musculature within our penis, and that musculature has loads of androgen receptors on it, which means it has loads of receptors for testosterone on it. So its ability to be able to grow and be regularly used is dependent on testosterone. So people who have really low testosterone, it's one of the reasons why they tend to struggle with erectile dysfunction. Now, I'm going to do one down the line, or maybe next month or the month after, on optimizing testosterone. It was way too much to go through in this presentation. But for arousal and for the actual growth or to make sure the muscle doesn't atrophy within the penis, because it can, like everywhere else, if you don't use it, you lose it. So with testosterone, it's something that you definitely have to take into consideration. And one of the major components when we look at low testosterone in males is blood sugar dysregulation. And it's something I'm sick of talking about blood sugar dysregulation, but it is one of the major components involved in it. So there's a negative correlation between blood sugar, HbA1c, glycemic control, and testosterone. So the more your blood sugar goes up, the lower your testosterone tends to go. And again, glycemic control is one of those ones that play a big role in it. So like if your blood sugar does this, not just chronically high, but if it goes up and down regularly, that's going to be a true sign that you may have issues in terms of testosterone. Okay, so recap on that. We need to be able to produce nitric oxide and get blood flow to the extremities in order to achieve erection, right? And then the ability to be able to maintain it is going to be based around testosterone. And when we look at something like nitric oxide, one of the real cool things it does as well is it actually uncouples oxygen off hemoglobin. So we need oxygen as well to be able to do this. So even if you give people oxygen masks and give them 100% oxygen, it still doesn't improve circulation properly because you need nitric oxide in order to do that. Okay, so diet, nutrition, and lifestyle has been covered. I'm done. Has anyone got any questions? We did have one girl who came on. Sorry, Sandra, I didn't notice. So all that kind of stuff when we talk about erectile dysfunction, that passes straight over, and I didn't mention it, that passes straight over to females. Now, when we look at, so it's a woman's ability to be able to get aroused, just talking directly to you, aroused and climax is based around circulation as well. So it is something that you have to take into consideration too. Anybody got any questions for me? I know I rambled on there for a bit long. So we did not chat about omega-3-6 balance. How important is that in the overall process? So just to, like, briefly, I touched on it on the original one last month, not in detail, actually. So omega-6 to omega-3 ratio is the balance between what are called like arachidonic acid, not necessarily arachidonic acid, omega-6, which is linoleic acid, and alpha-linoleic acid, which is omega-3 generally. And the omega-6 are pro-inflammatory. That's not necessarily a bad thing. You need pro-inflammatory fatty acids as well, right? Because they help with wound healing and signaling. But the omega-3 is something that we're massively deficient in now. Based off common Western diets. And the balance has massively shifted. And generally, we want something about 3:1. So 3:1 omega-6 to omega-3. And with Western diets, it's pushing somewhere to 30 to 40:1. So what it does is it kind of stimulates pro-inflammatory pathways rather than anti-inflammatory. So that's one of the benefits of omega-3 when we look at cardiovascular risk, is it's extremely anti-inflammatory. And you know that part that I discussed where oxidized LDL was getting into the soft tissue and causing all that damage? Omega-3 is the responsible part of the immune system to cause resolution. So it stops that when it's been dealt with. So omega-3 in that particular situation is really, really important. So think of it more like anti-inflammatory. So that's why it's extremely beneficial in those circumstances. Is pink lentil available? It is indeed. So I know Now does one. So Now supplements, I think it's a 30 milligram tablet. So generally speaking, with pycnogenol, somewhere between kind of 120 milligrams upwards of 300 milligrams seems to be really beneficial. Systolic. Oh, yeah, if you go on pycnogenol.com, you're going to be lost for days, Russell. Like, there's so many studies on it. It's systolic, not diastolic. Blood pressure, as long as it's consistent, but normally first thing in the morning, Craig, is where I like to get people to take their blood pressure, but generally just so it's consistent. We tend to have our lowest blood pressure in the morning.
So, Greg, I'll unmute for a second if I can ask you a question. I've traditionally had a little bit higher blood pressure, not in the danger zone, but none of the symptoms that you're describing. I mean, it's just high side of normal. So how much of an issue is that really, if I'm not experiencing any symptoms of you know, problems that go along with that? And you know, again, top recommendations on addressing it, I think you've listed for us, but what are your thoughts on that?
So what did you say yours was 130?
No, I didn't say. I jumped up when you asked who had taken their blood pressure. I went and grabbed the cuff while we were in the call, and it was. And of course, I just run to the other room to grab it and come back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
138/76.
Yeah. So, like, in fairness, it's probably not a good marker taken at that time. I'd love to see it first thing in the morning. But if you're sitting around 138. It's probably something that, although you may not see symptoms, you don't normally see symptoms with cardiovascular disease until further down the line anyway. So like with blood pressure, if I had someone who was like, if your blood pressure is actually about 140, that's definitely something I would prioritize to try and get lower. Now, there is some genetic components with blood pressure. So some people do struggle to get it into gold standard, but I'd love to see that get below 130.
Okay.
So one of the easy ways, as long as you've got no kidney dysfunction, which I'm sure you don't, it's just something I like to preface this with, like high dose potassium seems to work really well at lowering blood pressure. So somewhere between like 2 to 3 grams a day, I probably wouldn't take it all at once or you'll shit your pants, but take it split throughout the day tends to be really beneficial at lowering blood pressure quite effectively.
Thank you.
No problem. That's an interesting one, Andrew. I'll have a look at that. Now, anyone else got any questions? No one want to own up to erectile dysfunction now? I didn't think so. We're all just perfect men. Cole, go ahead.
All right, so I was given a supplement by one of my clients. He's an older gentleman, and it's called a load boost. And yeah, so I was just wondering, how's that stuff work? Because if you look at what's in it, zinc, copper, arginine, pineapple extract, and pygium.
So. When you look at testosterone deficiency, so people will instantly jump to like some of the fancier things, like Tonkat Ali tends to be a big one now. The aspartic acid tends to be a big one for testosterone production, but there's very little science behind them. Now, when you look at something like you mentioned zinc, if you actually are traditionally, like you can normally see on a blood test, like if ALP is low, if you're zinc deficient and you increase zinc status, 100% testosterone will go up. So what did you say? So pineapple extract,
pygium, L-arginine, and has soy lecithins in it.
Yeah. Okay. So
very high dose on the soy.
Lecithin. Yeah. So when, and then arginine is like I spoke about there is a way to try to produce nitric oxide production. So it's like, it looks, it sounds like trying to increase testosterone and increase nitric oxide production. A lot of those will target those same pathways when you look at anything in terms of like any sort of erectile dysfunction supplements natural wise.
Yeah. Well, so it's not erectile dysfunction, it's actually load.
Yeah, so zinc. Yeah. I'm not going to say the quote I've heard before around zinc. If you want to keep it long and ropey, take zinc.
All right. But yeah, so it was just interesting because it was given to me and I was like, I've never heard of this stuff before. So
yeah, it will be, it can be beneficial.
Yeah.
I'm on mute. So Daniel just asked a question. You mentioned a relationship with testosterone and cardiovascular health. Does that work both ways? So when you take TRT, does it improve cardio function? 100%. So there's, I don't know if I mentioned it briefly, but when you look at cardiovascular outcomes in people with low testosterone, they're really bad. Now, testosterone itself helps regulate blood sugar. It also obviously helps regulate musculature. So like increased musculature leads to better outcomes in terms of cardiovascular health. But in general, there's a little bit of a double-edged sword because what actually lowers testosterone is all the standard diseases of Western civilization. So like diabetes and everything that goes with it. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. But when you increase testosterone in deficient men, cardiovascular function tends to go up. Within optimal ranges then. So like, obviously, as you go the other way, cardiovascular risk tends to go up again. So if you use massive dosages of testosterone, then there's a risk factor involved with that. 30 dozen the supplement is a 30 milligram zinc citrate. Yeah, 30 milligrams is normally kind of the dosage that you're looking for in terms of zinc. You can go anywhere up to 60 if you're deficient, but you wouldn't want to do that for long periods of time because you'll end up with copper deficiency. So you mentioned if there's copper in that supplement, it's normally a good show to take both of them together. Anybody else?
This is kind of an off the wall one, but you're mentioning one of the questions was around omega-3, omega-6, different fatty acid combinations. Curious your thoughts if you've ever looked into the conversation about there's a blog around hyperlipid and this other guy has this site, it's called Fire in a Bottle, and basically talking about stearic acid and the reverse benefits of stearic acid as a fat over linoleic and other acids, and that it actually can help improve body composition.
Pass. No idea.
Yeah. I'll send it to you. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I'd be interested to look at. Zinc citrate. Yeah, zinc citrate's fine. Zinc citrate's not a problem at all. All right. If we've got no more questions, we can finish up there. We're pretty much just on time, 3 minutes shy. If anybody has further questions on this in terms of cardiovascular health, it doesn't necessarily obviously have to be about erectile dysfunction. More than happy if you want to chuck any questions in the chat or message me directly. I'm talking about the Telegram group page, or you can message me directly. That's not a problem. More than happy to answer any of you guys' questions as long as I know the answer. All right, guys. Lovely to see you. Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
It's my bedtime, midnight. I'll speak to you guys soon.
Good night.